Twice a week, Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay dissect the biggest topics in Black culture, politics, and sports on their show, Higher Learning. They discuss the most important and timely conversations while also frequently inviting guests on the podcast and occasionally debating each other. Check out Higher Learning on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
David, buried in the Ted Cruz Cancun scandal was this fact. Ted Cruz's dog is named Snowflake. Snowflake. What I want to know is that the best detail you've read in a news story since we found out Gary Hart went on a boat called Monkey Business?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, Ted Cruz's own boat, I think, is called National Ambition. So that's pretty bad, too. Snowflake works on a lot of different levels. I mean, that was really just one of the poor dog being left alone in the freezing temperatures. But that is just a wonderful, wonderful name for a dog, especially for a right-wing politician who's, you know, disappointing the entire world.
I think National Ambition sprung a leak this week. no, but that is, and then the forlorn picture of the dog just gazing out of the door of the Cruz estate. I don't know. You know, sometimes, again, the whole idea of just Ted Cruz going to Cancun was a seemingly ridiculously irresistible, too perfect for word story. But then the fact that there was also a dog buried within it.
Yeah.
There's just, journalists can just take the day off, right? Like we can do some reporting. Maybe the New York Times is going to turn up Heidi Cruz's text, but otherwise we'll just transcribe what you're seeing. Don't try to put too much polish on it. We'll be fine. Coming up on today's show, it's real simple. We talk Andrew Cuomo. We talk Ted Cruz. All that and more in the Press Box, a part of the Ringer Podcast Network. Hello, media consumers. Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker here. Okay, David. Which fallen political hero do we want to take on first? Andrew Cuomo or Ted Cruz?
Well, given that you're really limiting my choices, one's funnier than the other one. I guess we should be responsible and take on Cuomo first.
That sounds good. This is quite a story, and it all ties back to Cuomo's handling of nursing homes during the COVID pandemic and how many nursing home residents died of the coronavirus. So for a long time, journalists had stats to determine if a person in New York died of coronavirus in a nursing home. But the data released by the state made it difficult to tell when a person got coronavirus in a nursing home but later died in a hospital. Now, if you want to know how many nursing home residents died of coronavirus, you really do need the full set of data. So long story short, lawmakers finally got that data. And indeed, the stats showed that thousands more New York nursing home residents had died of the coronavirus in hospitals than we previously knew. So why the delay in releasing that information? Well, Melissa DeRosa, a Cuomo aide, told lawmakers that they were worried about a probe from the Trump Justice Department. As the New York Post, which broke the story, reported, DeRosa said, quote, "We froze," end quote, out of fear that the true numbers would, quote, "be used against us," end quote, implying that Team Cuomo made a political calculation. Now, Andrew Cuomo, David, is not much of an apologizer, but he acknowledged that it was a mistake not to release the data. Democrats then started criticizing Cuomo, which brings us to the next part of our story. According to CNN, Cuomo reached out to Democratic Assemblyman Ron Kim with some major TJ Ducklow energy. Kim told CNN, quote, "Governor Cuomo called me directly on Thursday to threaten my career if I did not cover up for Melissa DeRosa and what she said. He tried to pressure me to issue a statement, and it was a very traumatizing experience." Cuomo, and this is Kim talking, said, quote, "We're in this business together and we don't cross certain lines." And he said, "I hadn't seen his wrath and that he can destroy me." CNN did print this sentence, quote, "Cuomo's advisor denied that the governor threatened to destroy Kim." Now, journalism tip, if you have to print the sentence that you're denying that you are threatening to destroy somebody, you are already in trouble. The sentence itself is almost incriminating.
Yeah. Oof. You know, there are so many, this and the Cruise story too. I mean, they're interconnected in so many ways, but we're going to be hard pressed to avoid really obvious turns of phrase. Let's just jump right in. The cover up is worse than the crime, I think, is where we start on this one. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe the crime is the real thing. I mean, listen, he was right in being, I mean, somewhat justified in being worried about the Trump response, because the right wing had already become sort of obsessed with the nursing home deaths that had been admitted to, right? I mean, and that's not to justify anything that the Cuomo administration did, but the idea that you know, Trump wouldn't have targeted them over that sort of information, I mean, I think that's probably correct. And that's not an excuse for what happened. I mean, I'm indebted, I should say, to my brother-in-law Amit Prakash, who has a newsletter called No Politics at the Dinner Table, and who has written about this. But this is a really huge issue, right? I mean, it wasn't just that they fibbed about the number. It was that they were worried. I mean, they were so worried that the hospitals would be overrun, they passed this really weird blanket indemnity law that indemnified nursing homes from anything that might happen, not just with COVID-19, but anything else that would happen during this period. And the nursing homes, unsurprisingly, are huge donors to Cuomo. And then even after it became clear that there would be space in the hospitals, they made the decision to keep sending elderly people in this condition to nursing homes, presumably to open the hospitals back up for non-COVID related procedures, which, you know, you can look at it positively or, you know, suspiciously, depending on where you're sitting. This is just the tip of the iceberg, but it reflects really poorly on Andrew Cuomo. And I think that the biggest issue here, well, the reason why this has become such a big news story, media story, is because he was such a darling of the media during the early days of COVID-19. Now, is there a direct connection to that, between that and this? I don't even think there needs to be. You know, I mean, even during when we were talking about him as a media sensation in what, March and April, or was it even before that, of 2020, it was in contrast to our president, right? It was this sort of, it doesn't, well, I mean, explicitly, what you and I were saying about President Trump at that point in time was, it doesn't matter if you failed up to this point. It doesn't matter if you're failing as you're speaking, but there's a certain amount of duty that just being present and being honest with the people who elected you and the people who didn't, you can be a good leader and even admit wrongdoing or push the wrongdoing, push those investigations off to the future, and people will forgive you. Well, I think people were, you know, open to Cuomo without being particularly suspicious of the politics of the situation or anything that might be going on in the background. But now's the time when we look into the facts and we realize that there was, you know, I mean, anytime you're covering up death, you have to be held responsible for that.
Well, yeah, I think there's two parts of the heroic glow you're talking about that settled over Cuomo last spring. The most obvious, which is pretty much what you just said, is that he was not Donald Trump. He was not saying that the coronavirus was going to magically go away. He was seemingly not saying like, oh, don't worry about this. We'll just figure it out. He was at least in, you know, performance, taking action, doing something. And you knew that when Donald Trump mostly disappeared from the scene, that every Democratic politician was going to get an extra layer of scrutiny. And when the coronavirus pandemic just entered a different phase, which it appears to have now that we have a vaccine. The second thing, David, and I think we even talked about this last spring, was his defining quality has always been that he's a bully. That is like Andrew Cuomo's defining political quality. I'm a bully. And in good times, and I get this from Jimmy Vilkind of the Wall Street Journal, it would be, I'm a bully that gets stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
So during coronavirus, he was like, look, you may not personally like me. I may not be a warm and cuddly, feel your pain kind of politician, but I'm out here fighting for you. Unlike the president, I'm fighting for you. So it was like almost his sort of defining quality got reimagined as a political asset. And he had this And he had this great run, right? He felt cocky enough that he published a book in October called American Crisis Leadership Lessons from the COVID-19 Pandemic, with a, you know, sort of a grave looking photo of Cuomo on the front with his hands folded. I mean, that is amazing in retrospect. That's how good, that's how high he was on his supply of media adoration at that point.
Even when the book came out, there is a kind of concise subset of celebrity or particularly politician memoirs where part of the sales pitch is, actually, I didn't write that. That was my ghostwriter. I did, because if he spent time writing it, it's sort of damning, right? Yeah, it's the book. There's also that we won an Emmy. Am I correct in saying this? I mean, there was the adoration machine. It was in full effect. And, you know, when you live up to sort of the caricature that your worst critics are drawing of you, it stings, right? I mean, it's incredibly damning. You're right that sort of his caricature was used in was spun into a positive during this crisis. But meanwhile, the negative side of that caricature was just running rampant in the background, right? I mean, the whole situation is just really shocking. And then, you know, I think obviously it would have been much less of a big deal if they'd been straightforward with this stuff. Obviously, it would be much less of a big deal if Andrew Cuomo weren't calling and threatening people on the phone. I mean, I don't know if it's just that the scrutiny that he's now under, having become this sort of national figure, has changed the calculus, or that COVID has just sort of nationalized anything involving COVID. But, you know, he's operating like a old timey, like Tammany Hall politician here. And all you have to do is just point at him and say it out loud. And it just makes you want to vote him out of office today.
I think partly there's a nationalized critique of Andrew Cuomo and Gavin Newsom here in California.
Sure.
Which is just bigger than their own states. But part of it's just like, we were always going to go back as media, as the public, as lawmakers, as watchdog groups, and figure out what did politicians do during the coronavirus, and what worked and what didn't, and what was in retrospect the right decision and what was the wrong decision. That was always going to happen. Right. Again, a lot of it got overwhelmed by the immediacy of the situation last year, and then also the Trump administration's handling of the situation. But this was always going to be, and lawmakers in New York had wanted this data for months and months because they were thinking the same thing. As you said, Cuomo made a lot of decisions about nursing homes and hospitals specifically, and the flow of people from one to the other. So they were always going to try to figure out, okay, what did that do? Right. And that's a complicated question in itself. It's not just, okay, we sent somebody, you know, a nursing home had to accept somebody who had COVID-19. It's also, you are opening up a bed in a hospital to treat somebody else with COVID-19, right? Who may be at a different stage of that disease. It's a very, very complicated question, but we're trying to figure it out now.
Yeah. And I mean, and Cuomo himself, I think, was trying to make that point when he said maybe the most damning quote of this whole affair, which was, who cares if they died in the nursing home or died in a hospital bed, they died, right? I mean, that's the quote that will now accompany his name every time it appears in print. And it came off sounding really heartless. It was really heartless. The point I believe that he was trying to make is we should mourn their death regardless of how they died. But it's what it sounded like, and in politics these things matter, is who cares if they died. Right. And, you know, when you conduct your administration this way, people are justified in hearing that no matter what you say.
And remember, that was a total the opposite of heroic Cuomo from 2020.
Yeah.
He was, I do care. Right. Message, I care, to quote George H.W. Bush. Donald Trump was, message, I don't care. I can't emote. I can't do that. Cuomo gained so much currency because he seemed to care. Kind of distinctions were important.
What was really central to Cuomo's, you know, performance last year, and every, you know, every governor, every national figure, was that there, you know, it's easy to say we were all in it together, but there was the feeling that we were sort of figuring out solutions in real time together, right? That even if we, you and I weren't decision makers, that we were sort of in on it by, not even by proxy. We were there watching all these decisions be made. And the idea that, you know, and it was, you felt like, well, this is a tough situation, but people are doing their best. And the idea that there were sort of backroom dealings going on along the way, that people were playing politics, that's what's most saddening. You know, I mean, that's what sort of stings, because, you know, it's obviously it was a show. Obviously the entire Cuomo thing was like a performance, but for the reasons that it was necessary and for the reasons that it was effective, this just sort of blows the whole thing up.
No, and I feel you said 900 times on this podcast, performance is important in a national crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump refused to give the performance, even just the baseline necessary performance of a leader in a time of a pandemic, in the time of a catastrophe that's now almost killed 500,000 people. Like he did it. So the Cuomo show with all those PowerPoints and everything, that was important. That was effective. But the second half of that is you also get judged on what you actually did.
Yeah.
And like I said, now we've sort of entered this phase. I want to bring up one amazing detail from the call that Cuomo made to Ron Kim. So Kim said, we're in this business together and we don't cross certain lines. That's how he recapped the Cuomo call. This was from a Cuomo aide who was disputing that characterization. Quote, the governor has three witnesses to the conversation. The operable words were to the effect of, I am from Queens too, and people still expect honor and integrity in politics. Now, I just love the thin line between, we're in this business together and we don't cross certain lines, and hey, we're both two guys from Queens and, you know, we have certain expectations. I'm not totally convinced that those are actually different statements.
That's a very, I mean, it's sort of like the Bill Barr reading of the Russia investigation, right? You just get out there. If you just say, oh, I have a counterpoint, no matter what you say after that, it's sort of interpreted as a counterpoint, right? It's amazing how politics and media sort of work together at times like this. I just hope that when the paperback edition of American Crisis Leadership Lessons from the COVID-19 Pandemic by Andrew Cuomo, there's a little burst at the top and it's like, now with a new afterword, you know, taking to task this entire lie by Letitia James or whoever is actually going to, wants to put their name on that.
Well, you said if Cuomo didn't write the original version, he could write the afterword. Now revised extensively by Andrew Cuomo himself. That would be amazing. We should also add, David, Ron Kim was not the only lawmaker who had an Andrew Cuomo experience.
Oh, no.
CNN found three additional Democratic New York lawmakers. Quote, they said the administration had aggressively lobbied legislators to speak up in support of his handling of the nursing home related deaths, and that the threats were made against those who are considering a vote to strip Cuomo of his emergency powers. Continuing here, all three legislators said they were aware of outreach from the governor in which he clearly suggested or explicitly threatened political retaliation if they did not stand by him. Hmm. Yeah. Also this, David from CNN, Cuomo's efforts to reach Ron Kim appeared to continue through the weekend. Kim said he received multiple calls from a no-caller ID number, followed by messages from Cuomo aide saying the governor would like to speak with him again. Kim said he did not return the calls. He kept calling.
Wow.
Yeah. Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, I guess the obvious other lesson that you could learn from our former president is, as we said over and over again, it's not too late. You know, you can just start doing the right thing, and I think people will appreciate it. But maybe, obviously, Cuomo's had a long career of the sort of backstage, you know, malfeasance. So here's a couple more terms of that, huh?
All right, David, it's time for the Overwore Twitter Joke of the Week, where we celebrate a gag that was so obvious that all of media Twitter made it at exactly the same time. Send your nominees to @thepressboxpod, where they are always gratefully received. Our mentions that last week and this weekend were just loaded with Ted Cruz jokes. Loaded like Ted Cruz's suspiciously large suitcase was loaded on the way to Cancun. If you have not followed this for some reason, Texas Senator Ted Cruz left his home state last Wednesday when millions were without power and water and went to Cancun. And then he said he only did it because he was dropping off his wife and his daughters. He was being a good dad, as he put it. A ton of great jokes, David. Most obviously, Flyin' Ted. Flyin' Ted. We also had Fled Cruz. Fled Cruz. I enjoyed wasting away in Margaritaville. Someone sent us... It took him a second, but he got it. Someone sent us Clear Skies, Cold Heart, Ted Cruz, which is pretty good. We got Blame Your Daughters at Work Day. Someone else. Anyone realize Ted Cruz has no problem crossing a border to give his family a better life? And a personal favorite. Appreciate the subtlety here. Fiesta over country.
I love that. That's
Fiesta over country. Thanks to Dan McDowell, Utah Mustaches for Warren, Ray's Bait Shop, Derek Burke, Ray McDonald, and many, many others. And finally, David, some very cool and inspiring video from the Mars rover Perseverance, which touched down on the red planet on Thursday. It was an overworked Twitter joke to write, Perseverance rover claims it was just dropping off daughters on Mars. Thanks to Sean C., Michael J. Anderson, Marcus Kratz, Hugh Murphy, and Mike Kasson. If you kept your eye on the ball this week, congrats. You made the overworked Twitter joke of the week. All right, time for the notebook dump. And we did Andrew Cuomo. So now, David, it's time for Ted Cruz. Did you notice, and I don't even know if we need to do the blow-by-blow here because everybody knows the story at this point, but did you notice Wednesday night when those first photos from the airport came out that even resistance Twitter was like, I'm going to wait. I'm not going to pounce on these because this is so ridiculous. It can't possibly be real.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look like fake news media if I jump on this. And then the next day they turned out to be real.
Yeah. I mean, people were still doing high res zooms in on like the COVID mask he was wearing in the airport to sort of establish whether or not that was him. At some point, it became clear that it was. Well, I guess, I mean, I think it was when reporter David Schuster tweeted it. That's the one that I saw first and kept seeing passed around. He tweeted, just confirmed that Cruz and his family flew to Cancun tonight for a few days at the resort they visited before, and then immediate editorializing justified. Cruz seems to believe there isn't much for him to do in Texas for the millions of fellow Texans who remain without electricity / water and are literally freezing. I mean, this was a national joke. It was a national punchline. And this is what we will talk about every time Ted Cruz is on the national platform for the rest of his career, for the rest of his life. But the human stakes, I mean, it's really, I mean, that's what's really significant, right? I mean, people were actually dying, you know? I mean, so far, like dozens of people have died. I'm sure the death toll will end up being significantly higher. And it could have been a lot worse. And Ted Cruz and his family decided to go on vacation.
Yes. I mean, first of all, there was the lie that he couldn't have been doing anything. Of course he could have been doing something. Of course he could have been. Either you are a powerful U.S. senator or you're admitting that you're not a powerful U.S. senator. I don't think Ted Cruz wants to admit that. So, of course, he could be making phone calls, running things, or literally be out there handing out soup and manning a warming center.
Yeah, he managed to find something that he could do when he flew back and had to, you know, make penance and you know, look like he was useful. He found something to do, right? He went to parking lots and handed out water and cut brisket, whatever the fuck that is. I know what brisket is. I'm just questioning the entire
right, the
usage David of I, time.
David
I'm
and
a
I,
big
Texans
fan
are
of brisket.
Familiar with brisket. Yeah. Just
I really want
clear.
Brisket now that I'm having this conversation. So I guess I do. I apologize to Ted Cruz for making that joke, but I mean, he found things to do. The idea that there wasn't a bare minimum of things that he could do, and in the last segment talking about Cuomo, performance matters, right? And this is a kind of the subtle inverse of that. But, you know, your mileage may vary on what kind of presidential or political scandals actually merit national discussion, right? I mean, you can say, oh, it's part of our politicians' jobs to not have affairs and, you know, whatever, to face the music if they do. whatever you think about that, there is part of the job of a politician on any level, but particularly the national level of Senator Ted Cruz, is that you are perceived to be present and caring during a time of catastrophe, right? You are not just responsible to your constituents, but you need to be perceived to care about your constituents, like at least 1%. He found the energy or the necessity, or his assistants did, to tweet out storm warnings in the days leading up to it, right? He knew that this was a thing that merited discussion and warning and some modicum of care. And again, sort of like Cuomo, you sort of become your own caricature, right? I mean, Ted Cruz is forever was the most hated politician in D.C. amongst other politicians. And now the New York Times, you know, op-ed was how Ted Cruz became the least sympathetic politician in America. You know, he's going to wear that forever, and justifiably so. Obviously, the stakes of him not being there are not terribly high, because I don't think he would have accomplished much if he were there. But him leaving is, I mean, it's just so damning.
I completely agree. And you know, I'm a vowed opponent of the phrase bad optics,
mm-hmm.
or bad look. And I always think, forget the optics. Was it actually bad? In yeah. this case, when you have Texans freezing in their homes, looking for a place to warm up, looking, you know, being under a boil water notice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the optics of leaving for a trip to Cancun are important.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they're important, especially because less fortunate people just can't get on a plane and go to a resort.
Yeah.
Like, well, that is insane.
And, I mean, there are political stakes here, right? I mean, this storm, and this is not just about Ted Cruz, this is about Governor Greg Abbott and all the Republican leaders of Texas, Alan West, the whole up and down the line. I mean, this could we could look back in time and say this winter storm is when Texas turned blue, right? I mean, and that might be extreme, but the political stakes are real, and it's not just because this isn't a political argument. Like we're gonna start looking at polls again. It's no accident, I guess, that Beto O'Rourke and both Castros, but Julian Castro, were out, you know, on national television every single night talking about this. The reason why it's political in a broader sense, right? I mean, it's like there is a leadership question here. Ted Cruz, like I said, he might not have done anything. He could have stayed in his house and tweeted a couple times, not done anything at all. But he didn't go to Mexico because he didn't care enough about Texans. I mean, he doesn't care about Texans, right? But like, that's not the biggest part. The biggest part is that he literally could not imagine a thing that he should be doing besides doing that. Because all he cares about is his national profile and by proxy, his Texas profile. And he would have done something else. He would have been doing something else if he could imagine it. Right. Governor Abbott got in front of a camera and didn't say anything helpful. Right. I mean, no information. Just call 311 or check a website. Never mind that folks don't have internet access and owning
and raging
a phone.
Against green energy. Right? Yeah. Like that. That's what
exactly.
he had time
and
to
him
do.
Tucker Carlson, all these people ranting against green energy. Exactly. It's. This is the Republicans of Texas have abdicated a leadership role in some ambiguous way. This is a very literal way that they have done this, right? And when you have this like longstanding like bureaucracy argument, it's like it's so disingenuous on its face, but it's also this denial, right? I'm sure like Abbott and Cruz are both said they're going to get to the bottom of what went wrong. Despite
oh, sure.
the fact that like this is a thing that like Greg Abbott is literally in charge of, right?
You went mean, wrong. Like, yeah, yeah, you went wrong. You, sir,
but,
went
but
wrong.
But again, if he had said anything helpful in his like too late press conference, like there would be a little bit of forgiveness. But instead he's talking about windmills, you know, he's trying to deflect towards a lie. I just think that you know, Ted Cruz is not, as evidenced by all this, Ted Cruz is not much of a meaningful politician on a day-to-day basis, right? But he's just sort of Ted Cruz's own idea of a politician. And that's why I think this is going to just haunt him forever. Maybe it won't.
But yes. This kind of performance of, you know, I am the real ideologue here. I am bigger than mere grubby day-to-day politics. Yes. That is very much part of the Ted Cruz brand.
And we should say, just right before he left town, people were already obsessing about this like 6-month-old Ted Cruz quote, tweet, where he said, made fun of California for being, quote, unable to perform even basic functions of civilization, like having reliable electricity, right? I mean, that was happening before he left town. And so it's well.
And I believe he mea culpa'd that tweet before he left, weirdly, mm-hmm. and said, "Well, I can't say anything right now, right? Like, look at what my state is doing." No,
I wonder if there's a calculation there, because he knows every time he says something, he like gives up an inch on Twitter. He agrees with AOC for 5 seconds on Twitter, and that just becomes the sort of national news story for a week, you know. And like maybe he thought he could just skate by on that.
Yeah, but that's again part of the brand, right? Like I'm, you know, I'm a Republican, but really I'm kind of bigger than all this. You know, I'm bigger than Republicans. I'm bigger than, you know, grubby politics. I just exist on this level that no one else does. But then he did just the cheapest thing in the world, which is go on vacation during mm-hmm. a crisis.
Yeah.
That's why it works against the brand, quote unquote, or whatever we want to call it, that Ted Cruz has tried to build. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine him. You talk about politics. There's the politics in Texas, and, you know, will this make Texas a bluer, faster than it would have gone blue otherwise? There's also Ted Cruz clearly wanting to run for president again.
Yeah.
And how is every single of the 19 Republicans that are going to be on the stage, how is their first attack? Like, wait, didn't you just walk out on your state?
There was also the tidbit about him leaving his dog at home to freeze or whatever, which obviously a lot of people drew parallels to Mitt Romney having the dog on the roof. I don't know the dogs are the most important issue here, but it is salient that like that dog story about Romney was kind of all over the place when he was running for president, right? I mean, that was a constant refrain during his campaign. And now Ted Cruz has done something. I'm not just talking about the dog. I'm talking about leaving the country. That is, you know, as bad, significantly worse. And everybody was there in real time to watch it happen. You know, there's cameras everywhere at the airport on his return and his, you know, proud Texan face mask. And talking about the national brand, you know, all you have to do is like look at Google News to find out that everybody is covering this, right? This isn't New York Times and Washington Post, and everybody had a million different looks at it. But the New York Post headline is Ted Cruz's family seen soaking up the Cancun sun while Texas shivers. Yahoo News: Ted Cruz invited his college roommate on the Mexico trip he blamed on his daughters. And People Magazine: Ted Cruz, this is when he got back, Ted Cruz hands out water after Cancun trip backlash as his daughter's private school speaks out. And the daughter's private school, Politico, did a big look at this too, just constantly like missing, they're getting, being tone deaf on the issue. But like we even talked about the fact that he should have been quarantining when he was out there cutting brisket in the parking lot, right? I mean, like there's basic like rules of the age of coronavirus that he was ignoring going there in the first place, but then just coming back like nothing had happened. And you know, you would hope that this rubs off on people, right? Should this reflect badly on Hannity who was there to help him clean up the mess? Like, yeah, but it won't. I mean, I do think it'll stick on Cruz.
Absolutely, because there are political scandals that are bad and there are political scandals that are really, really easy to remember.
Yeah.
And just stick to you like glue. And again, does this mean that Ted Cruz won't get reelected senator from Texas the rest of his life? I don't know. Probably he might, right? Like, but it certainly limits his ambitions beyond that.
Yeah.
I just think like it is so memorable. And how about, I mean, you're talking about like the Texas face mask in the airport. How about those Houston cops that were walking him through the airport?
Oh my God.
Southpaw on Twitter tweets, big Orange County high schooler coming home from TJ thanks to the efforts of the U.S. consulate energy. when those cops are walking him through the thing.
I mean, I think that you're right. It's easy. It's easy to remember and it's easy to wrap your head around. I mean, Ted Cruz's defining characteristic is that he wants to be president, and
Yes.
Even if you approve on him on those terms alone, I mean, I don't know who would, but if you're a voter who's like, I want my senator to be president someday, this is like a huge, I mean, flub in that department. He messed up at running for president. He didn't care enough about basic moral terms.
He messed up.
Yes.
Like, you can mess up on both. You know, mm-hmm. like I shouldn't have done this because of the people of Texas, and I shouldn't have done this because I want to seek higher office. you could be wrong twice. And Ted Cruz figured that out. I just want to pivot to Texan-ness for a second, since you and I are, you know, notable, at least in our own minds, ex-Texans. This just brought up a couple of things to me. One is the way so many Texas politicians, not all, but so many Texas politicians talk about the rest of the country, especially California. You mentioned those Ted Cruz tweets. And I don't think there has been a Republican campaign for office in Texas in recent history, and probably some Democratic campaigns too, that go, we're not going to let this state go the way of California. I'm not letting Texas turn into California.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even the radio station I listen to, the sports radio station in Dallas, used to have this promo that goes, we don't have guys on the station from the coast talking sports, as if that were like such a terrible thing that someone. And that just drove me up the wall in the 22 years I lived in Texas.
Yeah.
It also drives me up the wall now.
Mm-hmm.
This just using California as a political prop for everything.
Yeah.
You know, and then we just, and again, I don't even care about the comeuppance, but I just think that was always so cheap.
Listen, Texan is, I mean, the Texas does have an identity that's different from every other place. You know, when I would tell people I grew up there in Kentucky, North Carolina, people in New York are like, oh, you're from the South. And I would just be like, well, I think the entire state of Texas would disagree with a big portion of that. It is an identity, you know, but and being standoffish, being quote unquote self-sufficient, is part of that identity, right? And that leads to these sort of painting everybody else as what's wrong with the world and what's wrong with the country. I mean, but there is a direct parallel to what's happening, what you're talking about, and this, you know, issue, which is the reason, I mean, everybody in the world knows what ERCOT is now and has done all the, you know, has read all the explainers and stuff like that. But the reason that the Texas power structure is set up in such a way is because, you know, 80 years ago or whatever, when they passed the Federal Power Act to regulate, you know, energy in the country, Texas was just like, now we'll keep to ourselves, right? They were going to, you know, just, they have their own separate power grid from the rest of America. And because if you keep it within the lines of Texas, you know, setting aside the fact that they have gone and borrowed power from Mexico in the past couple of decades, then you're not going to be taxed and sort of for interstate commerce. This law, for all intents and purposes, won't apply. But, you know, there's this idea that it's sort of like, this is Texas's like rah-rah, we can do it ourselves. Like, it's just the kind of old school secessionist tendencies that everyone in Texas is so proud of. But really it was just the utilities, right? That are just like, no, we want to keep all the money for ourselves. We like these major corporations were just like, no, we're doing good. We don't want to let the, we don't want other providers to come in, and we don't want the government to come in and tax us and tell us what to do. So, I mean, 80 years ago in Texas, these massive industries were hiding behind states' rights and like rah-rah Texas as a pretense for keeping their money, right? I mean, it's all like Texan identity. And this sort of like secessionist tendency is a real thing. And there's some, you know, I guess positive aspects to it. But it's always, it's always BS on some level, right? I mean, there's always these giant corporate interests that are more interested in times like this and pretending that windmills are the problem to get rid of natural energy resources than to actually deal with the issues that are affecting human beings.
Absolutely. And I would just add to the way Texas politicians talk about California is the way Texas politicians, again, not all of them, but many of them historically have talked about the country of Mexico.
Yeah.
And the way, you know, that just like they have used California as a political prop, they have used Mexico as a political prop,
mm-hmm.
demean the country, demean the people of the country.
Yep.
I just remember it was in the last decade that the Texas Department of Public Safety had a advisory warning people not to travel to Mexico, the whole country. Like that actually existed in Texas. And then after you do all that, oh, I'm off to the all-inclusive resort. Oh, okay. I'm gonna do this, but then, you know, when the weather is cold, I'm flying off to Cancun. Oh, well, that's interesting. How we square all that rhetoric. I just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. All right, it's time for David Shoemaker guesses the strained pun headline.
Yeah.
Last Tuesday's headline about Bruce Springsteen's DWI was Blunder Road. And David, if we could just take one more swing at Ted Cruz, one more. Today's headline comes from a whole bunch of people, including E-Train, Andres Chavez, Ian Herbert, and Andrew Joe Potter. It's from the Washington Post. Dan Zak, who's always good, did a piece on Cruz for the style section. And the Post used an airborne exploitation movie as its headline inspiration. What was the Washington Post's strained pun headline?
All right.
Washington Post. Not sure how many airborne exploitation movies there are, but
Snakes on the Plane, Snakes on the Snake on the
Remember, it's a newspaper, so you couldn't quite. That's more of a Texas Observer kind of headline.
Oh, you're right.
So play with that just a little bit. Not snake, but
fake on the plane.
I got on the plane when nobody was looking. I didn't think
sneak on the plane.
Sneak on a plane. Wouldn't you have gone for the symmetry of sneaks on a plane?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that would be kind of implicitly damning as children. And my guess is the Washington Post is above that, even if Ted Cruz himself is not.
Sneak on a plane. He is David Shoemaker. I'm Brian Curtis. Production magic by Erica Cervantes. We're back Thursday with more lukewarm takes about the media. See you then, David.
See you later, Brian.